Good evening. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio. And from what I am seeing, there are still problems with the live broadcast system. So if you know my number, my personal number, and you're not getting through, send me a text to let me know. If you're trying to log in, well, I'm not sure what to do there, but I can tell you that I am on, and it says I am going, so we are going to go strong. Snowman James is in the chat room, so that's something. Someone's in there. Big Sister's on the phones, so some people are getting through. We are showing up as Little Green Man in the chat, so that part's kind of weird. But, hey, what can you do? We'll keep going until we can't go no more. It is Wednesday, December 27th. 2023. This is the last show of Hank Jones Poly Sports for 2023. Paddling is really busy, so I will not be doing any hankerings or anything like that. Mainly because, like I said, I'm paddling like crazy right now. Busy time in some of the Springs areas here in Florida. So, hey, I am going to the Citrus Bowl on Monday, so you can count on me having plenty of stuff to say. Andy Hawk is out of the chat room. Hawkeye Mike is in on the phones. Hopefully they are hearing things. And so on from there. So, hey, we got our first couple of funnies for, they were laughies from last week, but I'll use them this week. What the hell? First one, Capitol janitors deep clean Senate chamber with flamethrowers. Yeah. That news last week or the week before was kind of grim, kind of gross, just kind of nasty, really. Whatever was happening was happening. It was gross as all get out. That's all I can say. Hawkeye Mike is hearing me loud and clear. That's good because he may need to pop in live later for some of the stuff on Trump still that's going on. Although some better news has come out. Second Babylon Bee funny from last week. Boston mayor hires bouncer to check skin color outside of entrance to holiday party. Yeah, remember we heard about that? Mayor said, hey, we're having a party, and then said, by the way, if this went to any of you white folks, this is non-white only. Yeah, kind of weird. Last couple weeks of obits that I deem significant. Wednesday the 13th. We lost pastor and choir director, conductor, Roger McMurrin. I say that because nobody really knows who he was, probably. But my dad sang under him at First Presbyterian Church of Orlando back in the late 80s, early 90s. He was a noted conductor. His father was a Presbyterian minister, so he went to Ukraine at one point to direct a choir, an orchestra, in Handel's Messiah. And it turned out they had never heard it there. It hadn't been done since in over 70 years. Of course, that was going on when all the, you know, as the wall was falling, so to speak. And so he was in Ukraine. On his way back, he decided that God was leading him there, and he became a pastor himself. And, yeah, he's a really nice man. My father really liked him. I know that. Now, that day, we also lost winemaking legend Mike Gergich at the age of 100. Now, Mike Gergich worked with several different wineries in California. He was with Chateau Montelena when they had their big surprise win in Paris in 1976. Their 1973 Chardonnay beat out several noted French white Burgundies. And then he worked with coffee maker Austin Hills. Yeah, Hills Brothers. They founded Gergich Hills Winery in Rutherford. Man, they made some hellacious wines over the years, by the way. Thursday the 14th, we saw the passing of former basketball great George McGinnis from cardiac arrest. He was just 73. God, I thought he was older than that. But he was originally an Indiana Hoosier, left to join the old ABA as an Indiana Pacer. Remember that? The red, white, and blue ball. Went to the 76ers. Followed by the Nuggets, and then he finished back with the Pacers. He won two ABA championships. He never won an NBA title. And that's with playing with Dr. J. Can you believe that? Saturday, the 16th of December, we lost former AC/DC drummer Colin Burgess at age 77. He happened to be there the night that Bon Scott, it's thought that he was one of the last people to speak to Bon Scott, former AC/DC singer, before Bon Scott passed away from overdose of various substances. Sunday, the 17th, we lost former UNC Tar Heel and NBA traveler Eric Montross to cancer. He's just 52. He was a two-time second-team All-America at North Carolina, part of the 1993 NCAA champions. That's when Michigan's Chris Webber called the timeout that they didn't have. He was drafted with the 9th pick in the 94 NBA draft by the Celtics, spent 8 years in the NBA with 6 teams. His family had announced that he was diagnosed with cancer back in March. Really sad loss. We also lost former DJ Jim Ladd, heart attack at age 75. He was most recently a fixture on Sirius XM on their Deep Tracks channel. I'm still pissed. December 1st, evidently, they got rid of that Deep Tracks channel. I loved that. Him and Earl Bailey. Ned Griffin would pop in, but mainly Jim Ladd and Earl Bailey, because they would play good stuff. Like, they'd play a lot of Jeff Beck, Mahavishnu Orchestra. They wouldn't just play like stuff off of popular albums that wasn't popular. Other ones on there would do that. They would just play a track off a hugely successful popular album and then say, oh, this is a deep track because it never got airplay. That doesn't make it a deep track. Anyway. Last Friday, 22nd, we lost former Dixie Chicks bassist Laura Lynch in a traffic collision at age 65. Saturday, the 23rd, we lost former actor Mike Nussbaum at age 99, just 6 days from his 100th birthday. Born and raised Chicagoan, he made his mark in several films, Fatal Attraction, House of Games, Things Change, and Field of Dreams, among others. Any David Mamet fan knows who Mike Nussbaum was, as in Checking In Mr. Green from Chicago. In Field of Dreams, he was the principal. Remember when they were trying to ban the books? He was the principal at that school. Good actor. That day, we also lost Bobby Jean Carter. She was the sister of Backstreet Boy Nick Carter and the late Aaron Carter at age 41. Not many details released. I mean, in the wake of Aaron Carter's death a few months ago, I can get that. Yesterday, we lost former musician, actor, and comedian Tom Smothers, one half of the Smothers Brothers. Originally a comedy duo, but they were actually musicians and became musicians, but they were actually musicians and figured out that comedy was part of what was going to make it big for them. Tommy Smothers died of lung cancer at 86, but in addition to his comedy and some acting, he was actually a musician, as I mentioned. He introduced many of the acts at the Monterey Pop Festival, believe it or not. And here's one that I would guess that only Hawkeye Mike would know, of anybody listening in the audience. And I'm going to see if he knew it. No, he's not putting it in here, but okay. Here goes. This is going to be good. This is going to be Tommy Smothers actually accompanied John Lennon on acoustic guitar on Lennon's smash protest hit Give Peace a Chance. He was one of the acoustic guitarists at the beginning of that song. And Tommy Smothers played on a John Lennon song. Wow. Would you never guess that? And of course, like any true celebrity worth his actual salt, he appeared on an episode of The Simpsons. Yes, he did. We also lost former VH1 and Food Network host Bobby Rivers, age 70. No other details, but great personality. Knew his stuff, which was what sort of set him aside from the other VH1 hosts at the time. And the reason for that, I think, is he was a little older than some of the others, but he knew his stuff musically. And so what he did, in addition to, VH1 was originally a brainstorm of Ted Turner, got bought out by MTV. And what they were trying to do, they knew they weren't going to be the MTV crowd, but they weren't, you know, there wasn't really much market for videos for adult easy listening. So what he got, some people are blowing up my phone, and then it's irrelevant stuff, totally irrelevant. They're not blowing up my phone, they're blowing up my watch. No, well, it's family, my daughter, so I can't get too mad at that. Anyway, he knew his stuff on a lot of older jazz and blues, and that wasn't going to make much video stuff popular either. So what he was able to do for them was sort of bridge that younger MTV appeal with the adult listening, easy listening, smooth jazz appeal. And that's what made VH1 successful at the time, because yes, you had the metalheads and you had the hard, you know, and you had even the popsy stuff on MTV, but 29-year-olds and 32-year-olds didn't want to listen to that at the time. And so they brought on some jazz musicians to help guest host, but Bobby Rivers hosted a Sunday jazz show for one, and it became very popular, extremely popular. And that literally is what brought VH1 up into brought them ad revenue, believe it or not. He had his jazz brunch, I believe it was called. Good guy. I always enjoyed listening to him. And then today we've had kind of two startling losses, not because of you. Well, one, because of youth. Lee Sun Kyun, he was in that Oscar-winning movie Parasite. And he took his own life today, apparently. And then the other side, 94 years old, we lost Austrian engineer and businessman Gaston Glock at age 94. Yes, he was the founder of Firearms. So there you go. I've mentioned this before, but please continue prayers for Felicia Goodson and her family. She had talked about a while ago on X, formerly known as Twitter, that she had been diagnosed with cancer just over a year ago. And very sweet lady. She's tough, being tough. She's doing her treatments. And she, from all, you know, at that time, all indications, she was holding her own. And I'm not trying to reach out or be pushy. I'm not going to keep, I messaged her once, not message, but mentioned it once, and I'm not going to keep pushing it. But it was, I really enjoyed having her on this show a couple of years ago. It was at the time when COVID was going on, and there was some unrest there was the George Floyd unrest nationally, but Iowa had some racial accusations at the time. And she did not say that race isn't a problem. She didn't say that at all. She pointed out it's not always just a race problem. It's often an understanding, a cultural misunderstanding. And she didn't say it like that, but she basically said, you know, coaches at a place like Iowa aren't going to have dealt very often with kids from either a big, huge cities or southern, maybe southern black culture, whatever. I mean, she said, I remember at the time she said, first of all, Kirk Ferentz isn't a racist. And she put it very bluntly. She also talked about how her son Tyler was actually shocked to hear of the accusations against Chris Doyle. And so it just, but she said, you know, it's still a problem, but you know when someone's a racist and when someone's not. It was, like I said, it was a privilege to get to talk to her. So if you haven't already, please add her to your prayer list as we close out 2023 and hope that she has a good 2024. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service for your hospital, medical clinic, large or small service company, property management. They work with remote staff. They work with the best and latest in technology. And so give them a call if you're needing their services or you're looking for employment. 800-555-3738. Look them up on the web, AllianceCommunications.com. Another internet laughy. Starbucks kiosks will now ask if you would like to donate $1 to buy a bullet for Hamas. Yeah, Starbucks getting their stuff in. So straight into Poly Sports, which would have been last week, but we're doing it today. It's a story that appeared on Yahoo about NFL punter Matt Ariza. And it says, where does he go to get his reputation, let alone his NFL career back? The accusations that, and this is Dan Wetzel writing, it says, the accusations that caused Matt Ariza to lose his NFL career shouldn't stand in the way of his chance to earn it back. So basically, back in 1987, eight construction executives were charged with allegedly defrauding the New York Transit Authority. And afterward, a former U.S. Labor Secretary, who was one of the most prominent defendants, said he was pleased that they were acquitted, but he had a question. He says, which office do I go to get my reputation back? So back in August of 2022, Buffalo Bills punter Matt Ariza was named in a civil suit alleging that he participated in the gruesome gang rape of a 17-year-old girl while attending a 2021 party near San Diego State University. At that time, he was punting for San Diego State. So, after that civil lawsuit. And he, you know, his reputation was shot, of course. The Bills cut him. No team was going to pick him up. He immediately denied any wrongdoing. He acknowledged only that he had consensual excess. Consensual sex earlier at an off-campus party with a woman he believed to be 18 years old. He said, the facts of the incident are not what they are portrayed in the lawsuit or in the press. I look forward to quickly setting the record straight. Well, it took 16 months. Hardly quickly, as Dan Wetzel points out. But he now faces neither any criminal investigation nor any civil accusations stemming from that evening. Final piece came into place a week ago yesterday when the accuser withdrew the civil suit. He acknowledged no wrongdoing. He made no monetary payment. His only concession was agreeing to pull his own defamation suit against the woman, though he did maintain the right to sue her attorney. Previously, San Diego County Police investigated the incident and declined to recommend that any charges be filed against anyone. They then conducted Prosecutor's office then conducted a separate independent investigation, came to the same conclusion. San Diego State University conducted its own independent conduct investigation and stated there were no findings against Matt Ariza. But as Dan Wetzel pointed out, there's no mechanism for exoneration. Initial accusations were major national news, splashed all over television, splashed all over the internet, splashed all over social media. As he very well by Dan Wetzel, the slow drip of the above findings and proceedings garnered less and less attention. And he said it left Ariza standing in his attorney's office sounding like Ray Donovan once did. Not Ray Donovan from the Showtime television show, Ray Donovan, former labor secretary. Where does he go to get his reputation, let alone his NFL career, back? Put it this way, Ariza said, the day you file a lawsuit, you don't have to prove anything. Sometimes you don't have to prove anything for years. So this idea society has that the second somebody files a lawsuit, it's completely true, and we must take action based on what's alleged, I disagree with it. And I think professional sports teams, as well as college teams, should have the backbone to say, look, we take these allegations seriously, but until something is proven, we can't cut our guy. We can't push somebody out who's worked their whole life to be here, he continued. I think that's what I would like to see moving forward. Now, professionally, it's his goal to return to the NFL. He was a unanimous All-American, an NCAA record setter at San Diego State. He was dubbed the punt god by fans. In Buffalo, he won the job and a four-year, $3.8 million contract almost immediately, in part, pointed out, hitting an 82-yarder in the preseason. And further pointed out by Dan Wetzel, punters are expendable. Ariza needs to be better than ever. Now, the New York Jets brought him in for a workout last offseason, didn't sign him. Other than that, it's been quiet. Now, here's the thing. Some NFL personnel told Yahoo Sports last offseason that even after prosecutors publicly announced that no criminal charges would be filed, the existence of the civil suit gave them pause. Well, that's gone. Others were waiting for a jury verdict of not guilty as cover from any fan and media criticism. And see, this is the problem. This is the problem when politics and sports collide. What's the problem? Well, I'm just using Jesse Jackson as an example. Years ago, I remember asking, what does Jesse Jackson live on? I mean, what kind of church is he? He's not a mega church pastor. What does he live on? So I asked Vito one time, what do people like that live on? He says, well, in the case of a Jesse Jackson or an Al Sharpton, a lot of it is quasi-extortion. And it's not just, the reason I say I'm not bringing in Jesse Jackson is the only, it's not unique to him at all. I would say a similar person would be a John Morgan, who's an ambulance chaser here in Orlando, but he's also a friggin' extortionist. They use threats of lawsuits against companies, and they do these ads, your company. So they use threats of lawsuits against companies. Hell, the Orlando mayor, Buddy Dyer, is that himself. There's no finer example. They use threats of public humiliation. And that's what they've done to the NFL. They've used threats of, we'll shut it down. I mean, to tell you how twisted it is, the Dodgers hold frigging drag nun night with nuns in drag, guys in drag acting like nuns running around the bases. And that's how upside down it is. It's just the threat of we'll do this. When in fact, in this case, it's now pretty obvious nothing wrong happened. But the media and certain fans and the extortionist types, this guy's career could be ruined. I mean, it's one deputy district attorney in this case pointed out that when this supposedly happened, Matt Ariza wasn't even at the party. And this was a female district attorney. This wasn't some Me Too type going after him. This was someone who was doing her job, apparently, said he wasn't even at the party anymore. And she even wondered whether the gang rape occurred at all. She said, I absolutely cannot prove any forcible sexual assault based upon what happened. She also pointed out, you were telling people at the party you were 18. Another witness overheard you say you were 18. She also pointed out you told a friend you just had sex. You weren't unhappy. You appeared to be having fun. That appeared to be consensual. So, yeah, that's what happens. Politics and sports collide sometimes. I mean, it often doesn't lead to good stuff. You get the places where they extort fans into paying for multi-billion dollar stadiums now by saying, we'll just leave. So now we go to from polysports to straight, flat-out racism with this post on X, formerly known as Twitter, by former University of Illinois and Pittsburgh Steelers running back Rashard Mendenhall. Post he made a couple years ago. He says, I'm sick of average white guys commenting on football. Y'all not even good at football. Can we please replace the Pro Bowl with an all-black versus all-white bowl so these cats can stop trying to teach me who's good at football? I'm better than your goat. Now, somebody pointed out, if you're talking about who, Christian McCaffrey, who's our current goat, white running back, you're not even in this league. I mean, he just got crucified, vilified. But what I don't understand is where was that coming from? Where was that even? And it's not his first go around with this. I don't understand those feelings. I really don't. Now, I'll tell you something. Full disclosure, I just was commenting on something former Hawkeye Joe Von Johnson was posting. He was talking about who's in charge and, you know, as a black man. And I get it. I can sort of see where he's coming from. I've never lived that. But the comment was sort of that, well, you know, nowadays, well, I think it's gotten past that. Not so much that race relations are so wonderful. They're certainly better than most people tell you they are. But I think that what we've come to societally isn't about race at all. It's about greed and corruption. And I think, you know, maybe that's the sense, you know, Martin Luther King talked about a day when our children, or that our children, when I say our children, not, you know, collectively, children would come together as friends regardless of skin color, that you would judge someone not by the color of their skin, but the content of our character. But he also said it wasn't going to happen overnight. He said it wasn't going to be us or our kids. It would probably be our grandkids. I think we'll get there. But he made a post about, you know, you see who's in charge. And I kind of think, well, I'm not seeing that the same way. And what I mean is not that the racism isn't existent or that race, everything is perfectly good. No. But the corruption and the greed that we see now, truly colorblind. I mean, there's only two types of colorblindness, it appears. That of an idyllic utopian society that may never exist until we go to heaven, or the other side, a totally sleazy, disgusting society where evil and greed and corruption know no color. That greed and corruption are equal opportunity, truly equal opportunity. So anyway, that's Rashard Mendenhall's take. President Trump off the ballot in Colorado last week, per that state's Supreme Court. Now, this is where if Hawkeye Mike is available, I would love him to jump in. Hopefully we can get calls. But here was his take a couple weeks last week. And we were, you know, we talk, a group of us, Indy Hawk, who's in the chat room, T. Bodie, Brother Tommy, Hawkeye Mike, and I. So I'm going to find this. This is a while back. This is kind of going back before Christmas here. Okay, so okay, let me get right to it because there was some good stuff about it. So to where he said it, because okay, so this is what he said on December 19th, and he was spot on. He said, Colorado Supreme Court, all Dems appointed by Dem governors, just ordered Trump off the ballot in Colorado for 2024. They've ruled Trump engaged in insurrection, a charge Jack Smith never brought against Trump because he knows it would never stick. With the waving of a pen, these loons have disenfranchised 6 million Coloradoans, including himself. It's insane. They stayed the decision because they know the U.S. Supreme Court will overturn this. These Dems are the real threats to democracy and are trying to bar Trump because they fear the outcome if voters get to vote. At least this will be in a fast track to the U.S. Supremes to stop this madness before other blue states try doing this too. T. Bodie actually said part of that lunacy is what kept him and his family from considering moving back to Colorado. Brother Tommy, for those of you who've heard Brother Tommy, he said, your state absolutely sucks, not your fault. So Mike's on the line. I'm going to bring him in. Mike, how you doing? Merry Christmas.
Well, Merry Christmas, Hank, here from the People's Republic.
Yeah, you're the newest People's Republic in our country.
Yeah, no kidding.
So how did this even come about? Because I don't follow the day-to-day. So how did this get put to the – how did it get to the Supreme Court there? Why were they able to rule on that?
Well, there was a lawsuit filed, I believe, somewhere in the Denver District Court, State Court, by quote-unquote concerned citizens, voters. And there was a couple, you know, these left-wing groups, I can't remember the name of them now off the top of my head, who advanced the lawsuit, and they lost in the district court on the grounds that they, more on a legal technicality that, well, it's actually a pretty important thing. They said that clause in the Constitution does not apply to the office of the presidency. And even though that court found that Trump did commit or engage in insurrection, which, you know, you can get into that if you want in a minute, totally absurd. I think the Court of Appeals affirmed that, and then it went up to the Supreme Court, and then we got the famous decision last week, 4-3. So seven liberal Democrats, and it still was just 4-3.
Yeah.
Which just tells you how cockeyed this theory is. And these findings that Trump committed insurrection, that to me is what's so infuriating. And it's what these Democrats keep persisting. You know, you hear them on all over the media. And, you know so that's what – and by the way, there's a reason why from the beginning after January 6th they started using this term insurrection. Because,
yeah.
A, they wanted to link Trump to it, and then you can go and try to use it as a basis to try to prevent him from ever running for office again. And it's not an insurrection. B, Trump didn't participate in whatever happened. It's just absurd on so many levels. There was never any due process here. Trump was never allowed to present witnesses or subpoena witnesses in the trial court when this was being tried. And so the court's findings are based on matters that basically violate procedural due process. And there's just so many things wrong with this thing. And I have no doubt the Supreme Court is going to make short work of this. And they're going to have to take it because there's other jurisdictions that are going to try to latch onto this. Although the Michigan Supreme Court just earlier today said that, dismissed a similar lawsuit in their state.
Yeah,
and,
both Michigan
and, let me tell you, the Michigan
and West
Supreme
Virginia.
Court is liberal too.
Yeah,
sorry,
West Virginia also has said no go.
Yeah, well, you would expect that because West Virginia is a conservative state, probably have conservative judges. Michigan, though, these are all appointees of a Democratic governor, and they still couldn't stomach it. Just like the Minnesota Supreme Court, you know, it's another blue state basically,
yeah.
wouldn't countenance it either. It's just so absurd, and this is the I'm telling you, I'm getting to the point here, you know, especially with retirement coming up. You know, I got we both have it coming up, the big 6-2. Do I want to keep living in this state? I love it out here, but it's just become loony land. It really has. I mean, you talk about, was it Ted saying that that's kind of keeping him from wanting to come back, and I don't know.
Yeah, and you wonder, I guess this is my question, because you're when I say an attorney, and I'm telling everyone for Mike's benefit, he is not a practicing attorney. He's a reformed attorney, so to speak. But he is
recovering.
A legal, yeah, recovering. But he is of a legal mind. He knows the law.
Well,
he knows
15
the
years in the federal courts, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know the law and you know the Constitution. So, you know, that's where I'm coming from with that. Is that the, you know, because anybody can say, oh, he's a legal expert. But, I mean, so you know the law. So, I mean, that's what what would these judges, I mean, is it that prevalent in our system that we have people, because, I mean, can you look at that kind of decision and say, well, you know, he or she is an otherwise learned judge. I mean, you can't look at that kind of a decision, can you, and say, anything other than, well, this is a hack?
Well, you know, no, because what you have now, and this is true when the Democrats appoint people, I don't know if you ever go on YouTube and you see some of these things where judges are appearing in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. You see people like, you know, Senator John Kennedy, who's great, questioning the loons that are being appointed to district court of appeals positions by this administration. They're woke, they're Democratic partisans in robes, and they really abandon all semblance of a lot. Not, you know, I'm not saying every single one, but I mean 80% of them are just Democratic partisans in robes
with the agenda of the, you know, AOC, a lot of them. And they populate the Department of Justice now, including the Civil Rights Division, but really anywhere. They're just being appointed in, you know, left and right to the bench, left and left, I should say, left and more left. And, and now, so, you know, now one thing that helps is even before you get to the Supreme Court, where Trump has three appointees on the court, is in the 4 years he was in, he did get a lot of appointees to the federal bench. So there's still a lot of good district court and court of appeals judges out there. But, you know, particularly if Biden, that's why this is one of the reasons people don't think about it, although they should be, why it's so important that if Biden gets another 4 years, I mean, it's just going to be worse and worse in terms of the people that are serving on the federal bench. And he may get another Supreme Court appointee or two, who knows. But it's one of the real reasons why it matters who we put in office. And if Trump can get back in there, he can undo a lot of the stuff, you know, and start appointing some more sensible. You know, the Republican appointees, by the way, are not by and large partisans in robes. They tend to be very thoughtful. Look at the people that were put on the Supreme Court: Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett. They're more conservative, or what you'd call traditionalist type judges. But my God, their reputations are impeccable.
But they're also constitutionalists, they follow our Constitution. I mean, that's what I don't understand is when people say, I mean, you know, I get that there are people that don't like the Constitution, but that's their problem, not mine. I mean, or I should say their problem, not ours. I mean, the fact they don't want to, you know, abide by the Constitution isn't my issue. That's the law of the land, you know. So when they sit there and say, oh, it's a living, breathing document, I don't even get that one. I never will, how they come up with that one, but whatever. I mean, it's infuriating, you know. So here's another one that you thought would die. You thought you got tired of hearing. Probably everybody thought they got tired of hearing. But remember the one I talked about a couple months ago, the Obama chef that drowned?
Yes.
So that popped back up. And the reason it was so interesting is it popped up last week when I was doing a shorter show last week, but I said, I've got to cover this, because that day, last Wednesday, I happened to be doing my paddle out on the intercoastal. Like the Edgartown Pond, where this particular event happened, is on the intercoastal. I mean, you say it's called a pond, but it's really, it's off of whatever ritzy suburb. I don't know if it's directly Martha's Vineyard. But it's off of, you know, it's not really the ocean, but it's not a pond inlet. It is ocean.
It's like a lagoon or something, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's basically
the intercoastal waterway can be, you know, right there by the ocean, but it's technically not the ocean itself. So Judicial Watch got 31 pages of records in a FOIA lawsuit from Homeland Security. Now, the Obama chef was Tafari Campbell. The woman that they remember, they talk about a staffer, Ms. Taylor. She was just named Ms. Taylor. Now, the Secret Service guy is still redacted, and I get that. I can see why that would be, you know, other than, you know, unless it was something criminal. But she said she reported he fell in the water and struggled for a couple of seconds before giving up and sinking under. Well, that to me, what do you mean giving up? Who gives up? I mean, you know, and it also, here's the thing, the Secret Service could not get the first two votes
first of all,
they tried to use.
How would he know that? How would this person know that?
I don't know. You know, it's what I've said all along. Something's wrong with it. But
how would an autopsy report even be able to note that?
That he gave up? Yeah. Well, that just hurt.
How would you know that?
Well,
they could tell you drowned, which we already know, but that's by it.
But it shows the Secret Service could not get the first two boats they tried to use to search for him to function and had to use the groundskeeper's boat. Now, I know you didn't serve in the Secret Service, but you did work in the federal court system, and you have seen the workings of federal. Can you buy, and you were in the Army as well, can you buy that two Secret Service boats there on site are not functioning when it's
presidential detail? I think what you're sort of getting at is, and we saw this at the White House with the cocaine incident, where I think a lot, all too often, the Secret Service is basically their job is trying to cover for the president, whoever it is that they're guarding.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, it's Trump. You know.
Right. I know.
But you know, the boats would be functioning if this had been, you know, at Mar-a-Lago or something.
Well,
it gets even better.
Multiple agents from the Secret Service were involved in the search. Guess which office? Which Secret Service office? Little Rock, Arkansas. Is that not beautiful? Little Rock.
Well, I don't understand. Yeah, why would they have Little Rock, Arkansas involved?
Why would they even mention that? I know. So it was, they got it from August was when it happened. The request was October 25th. But so here's the other thing. It was behind the Obama's estate. Remember what we were told where the Obamas were?
They weren't there, remember? I thought.
Yeah, well, it's going to get good. So the records indicate July 24th report from a Secret Service agent. Ms. Taylor stated that Mr. Campbell was not wearing a life jacket, had no personal flotation devices at the time. A separate report notes how Campbell's companion, quote, collapsed on the ground and stated that Tafari had drowned. She stated that he fell in the water and struggled for a couple of seconds before giving up and sinking underwater. I still don't get that.
Okay.
Agent continued describing how a supervisor.
Wait a minute. Why were they out on the boat anyway? He's the chef. Was he still wearing a chef out? I mean, I don't understand what's. I mean, were they having? Was an epic paddle adventure going on there? Or, I mean, what caused this guy on his own with maybe one other person to do this?
Well, then it says a supervisory agent and another agent attempted to start one of the boats, but had difficulties lowering the motor. And he says, I headed down with such and such, but told her to continue down and yelled to the SA and SSA, which must be supervisory, that I would run to get the keys for our USSS boat. I sprinted to the command post, grabbed the keys, and sprinted back towards the boat. A similar issue occurred with the motor on the second boat. We jumped into a third boat belonging to the groundskeeper, and it worked without issue. That's kind of scary. Then it says the same report.
Well, they probably don't. In fairness, they probably don't have a lot of cause to use those boats. But,
so here it goes. Here's where it gets good. The same report notes former President Obama came to the incident scene, and the search was paused so President Obama could speak to the eyewitness. This is the Obama's
At least they didn't use the term coach.
Right, but I mean, literally, he wasn't home. Remember, they weren't there.
Right. So apparently that was a big lie that they.
Yeah.
That
so
was
it says we continued our search.
The Obamas were not there.
Yeah, we continued our search with flashlights. Shortly thereafter, we were called to Wilson's Landing as former President Obama was there, and the local fire department, in conjunction with Massachusetts Police Department and other local agencies, setting up an incident command post. An incident command. It's just a missing person in water. What's a command post? He had wanted to talk with redacted. The first EMS police response we saw may have occurred within an hour. I recall seeing a small PD or fireboat scanning the shoreline just after it was getting dark. So,
there's all kinds of stuff here that you know, doesn't make sense and kind of, you know, has you scratching your head as just kind of a WTF here, just the whole thing, what's going on.
That says
course, you know, I don't want to, traffic and rumors or something, but there's rumors about this guy and Obama and I won't say anymore because I don't know. We don't know.
Well,
but
here's
it's
the weird
certainly
part.
Something that needs to be looked at.
Yeah, something my boss said at the time, my paddle boss, said, he goes, I always just assumed it was Obama, one of Obama's daughters. So that's when I started, you know, and I get on the phone with Vito, and, you know, Vito and I can, just like you and I can, I start going all over the place with it. But, I mean, you know, here first it was they weren't home, but now he's there and he wants to talk with, first of all, like you said, coach, why was he there? Why was he part of the thing with the witness? I mean, he should have been saying anything I can do to help, but he shouldn't be there talking to the witness to, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I would see that that's wrong.
Yeah. But who's going to stop him?
Yeah.
At that point, there were no police there, right? It was just the Secret Service.
Well, there's the other
thing. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
They hadn't called the local authorities. Maybe this will make Chappaquiddick look like a, you know, stroll on the beach or something. I don't know.
Well, wasn't that what that was? Oh, wait. No, so Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch said He said, it's disturbing that Secret Service boats did not work. He goes, this new perhaps explains why the Secret Service is still hiding video related to it. So there's video of it? That's kind of scary. I mean, I just, you know.
maybe
I go back.
A House committee ought to, you know, look into this or something.
But here's why I go back to this. Like they said, they needed to use sonar to find him. You know, there's something off on that. It says that clothing was found separate from the body. Now, I don't know if that means clothing came off during the, I mean, I don't know that. Or maybe he was trying to take it off because he felt heavy, weighed down. I don't know. But, I mean, this is what I'm getting at, really.
No, that's it. You know, it took a while to get the body up because they had to, you know, get down there and break up the concrete, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, I don't.
Please,
I wasn't even going there. But, I mean, is this just not, I mean, to me, here's where I don't go. It's like I said. It is a just you would never.
Your imagination can run wild on all this.
Yeah, but I mean,
you know,
I have seen people going out onto the intercoastal in stupid situations, and we've talked to them, myself and other guys at the time, and you know what? If they want to go, they're going to go. And the same thing here. But I'm thinking Secret Service on the property of the president, I would think they would have a little more sway and could say, hey, look, we can't let you go out in this if this is the condition, or we can't let you go out without a life vest or whatever. But Vito also pointed out, because remember they said for at one point that he couldn't swim, but Vito said, no, there's Facebook videos of this guy swimming like a champ, like he learned to swim and everything. So something's not right with all this. I mean, it's just not, you know, and like I said, everyone thought I was going to let this die. Maybe not. Maybe I'll just keep on with this as long as I can. It'll become like Six Gun Justice, an ongoing saga. So,
by the way, whatever happened, I mean, the story just completely went away really fast, which is odd to me, about the utter lack of curiosity in trying to get to the bottom of who smuggled the cocaine into the White House. I mean, I think we all know who we suspect, and it's not just Hunter. I think as it's come out that his daughter, was it Ashley, is kind of a drug head too. But so it could be any number of people, but there's no curiosity at all to get to the bottom of something like this, which, you know, if this was in the Trump administration, my God,
we'd still be hearing about it. It would be like Rachel Maddow, day 53 or whatever, however long ago it was.
And
absolutely
a complete snow job on that. And I hope, and I think there is some evidence that might not be dead in terms of the House committee, you know. Let's get all the information out there, because I think that there's been actual suppression of stuff going on, you know, with either whether it's the Secret Service or the FBI. I think they know a hell of a lot more than they're you know, talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, and then this is the last one before I talk about we start talking about Iowa football. We'll talk about college football, but Iowa football, let's face it. So get this. So remember the administration had a ban. All government devices had to get rid of TikTok. Well, turns out Office of Management and Budget, which banned TikTok for federal government devices last February, Criminal Investigation Division of the IRS failed to enforce the ban, didn't ask for an exemption, and so IRS devices still had TikTok, which, of course, TikTok is, you know, supposed to have
Chinese-controlled, basically.
Yeah, basically all kinds of – I mean, how bad is it going to get that –
Well, again,
this
that's
stuff
something
goes
I
on.
Do think that the House committees should be on top all over that, like, you know, like flies on a rib roast, to quote Cousin.
Yeah,
Eddie,
but will they?
There's a lot there too that's being suppressed.
But will they? I mean, that's the question. I mean,
well,
you know,
I think that you know, if IRS is going to have a very difficult time trying to deny a House committee information about this, because I don't know what I mean. They can't, you know, if it's national security, then I'd like to know, you know, then why were they allowing it? You know,
yeah.
So if you're going to allow people to do it, you can't say, well, we can't talk about it. Come on.
Yeah.
Makes no
yeah.
sense. You know, So, I mean, they should be able to get something out of this, but, you know.
Yeah. So let's
go back
to the –
one thing after another.
Let's go back to the Colorado thing that we were talking about with President Trump. So, as a follow-up, the Colorado GOP said they would just abandon the primary, that they wouldn't go to a primary. They would go to a caucus type of arrangement.
Yeah.
Here's a question I have, because, you know, Iowa, where we went to school, has the caucuses. So what exactly
Three
would
weeks
that
away.
Yeah, so but what exactly would that mean in the case of Colorado? So what would it mean if the Republican Party said, we are not going to go use a primary system, we're going to use caucuses? Is that against Colorado law, or is that perfectly within Colorado?
No, they're perfectly within
their rights?
Well, remember, the parties themselves, like the Colorado Republican Party, Colorado Democrat Party, are not governmental entities. They're private entities,
right. Okay.
Like, you know, just like the major parties are.
Right.
Now, so if they don't want to have – if instead of doing a primary, they say, you know, we're going to do a caucus instead, you know, and more than that, they could, you know, maybe they can't cancel the primary. They can say, we're going to hold a caucus, and it's based on the results of the caucus that we're going to decide delegates. There's nothing that the state of Colorado can do to stop that.
Okay.
The problem is if this doesn't get correct, problem is not so much – primaries, because any state could just say, hey, look, you know, fine, you know, you're going to do that. We're going to go to – because what we're talking about right now is how the Republican Party chooses delegates to the convention. But what the problem comes up is, if this is not corrected, is with the general election.
Okay.
And there, you know, it's got – you know, there's only – the only way to do it is through an election. So if this thing stands – it would bar Trump from appearing on the general election ballot, and that would be that's the problem. That's the real problem.
Okay.
Why the Supreme Court's got to take it. But, you know, there is some movement that says, and maybe finally Republicans are getting their, you know, what's out of their head and saying, hey, look, maybe we can, you know, in Florida and Texas, get, you know, kick Biden off the ballot.
Yeah.
You know, and see, you know, give them a little taste of their own medicine. Although I would say, it's wrong constitutionally to do it in Colorado, what they did. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be encouraging Republicans to like it, getting a tit for tat, at least not yet. Let the Supreme Court correct this. I'm positive Supreme Court is gonna overrule what the Colorado Supreme Court did. And the beauty of that is it'll stop all this crap going on in other states too, because when Supreme Court rules, it'll be a nationwide decision. To the application of the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
Okay.
The insurrection clause. Yeah.
So that's where the real problem is. It's not so much the primary, it's what happens in the general. So they're saying effectively.
Right, because this decision would have.
So it would. Okay. So that's where the big problem comes in then. Okay. And I want.
Well, remember,
the
gist of the ruling is that Trump is barred from running for president because he participated in insurrection against the United States.
Right.
The Colorado Supreme Court can't control what other states do, but if that decision stands, there's a lot of other states that, you know, particularly some blues. I think California is one of them. The point being is that, you know, Colorado's probably going to go Democratic, no matter what. But the, you know, in we're talking about 6 million voters, including myself, by the way, being denied the opportunity to vote for president, and if Trump's on the ballot. And they went a step further. They said any write-in votes for Trump can't be counted. So in the last election, I mean, you're talking about disenfranchising. I think Trump had roughly 1.5 million votes in Colorado, something like that.
Okay.
Including mine, by the way. So that's what's going on here. It's a this is what tin horn dictatorships do.
Yeah.
What Putin does, he doesn't let people run other than himself.
Yeah.
And so what we've got here is the Democratic Party, who's in control of the executive branch of the government, with Democratic officials And, you know, prosecutors in Democratic jurisdictions with Democratic judges doing things to stop their chief political opponent from running for office. Where does that happen in the world?
Yeah,
you know,
it happens in China. It happens in old, you know, 1970s and 80s Nicaragua.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like Moon over Parador has come to the United States or something, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and we're supposed to be, and they're talking about Trump being a threat to democracy. The hypocrisy is stunning. Trump never did anything to prevent anybody from running. And by the way, he may have objected and whether you think he was right to do it or not. As I recall, when it, all of a sudden done, he tried to go through the courts and they rebuffed him. And then when the Electoral College votes were cast, he quietly transitioned out of office.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, and this notion of an insurrection, when he called on them to go down and protest peacefully and patriotically, and he said it several times, including giving a speech a couple hours after when there was rioting down there, repeating the same thing, which they leave this out because it's not convenient to their narrative. The notion that there was not one person that went into that building was armed of the protesters.
Yes.
It was this is not an insurrection. Jonathan Turley, who's not, you know, a Republican, but he's, I think, a very bright guy, said it was a protest that turned into a riot.
Yeah.
Fine. Some of those people deserve to be charged maybe with criminal trespass.
Right.
But I don't think there's anyone, leave the Trump aside, any one of these protesters, thousands that have been prosecuted, have not one of them, let alone Trump, has even been charged with insurrection.
And in fact,
isn't
Supreme Court also going to be ruling on whether or not the obstruction charges can stand against certain defendants, if not all defendants?
That in a separate case with January 6th defendants who were convicted, they've challenged their convictions on the basis that they were using these obstruction charges unconstitutionally. And the Supreme Court has a track record, not just generally, but with this Smith guy in particular, when he prosecuted the former governor of Virginia, overruling the guy, saying you're taking statutes and you're stretching them way beyond where you should. Well, that's the thing here with these January 6th defendants. And the Supreme Court has accepted the case in the normal course, probably won't be any decision on it till June, but it directly impacts Trump because Trump has charges that are identical to what's going to be decided,
which is
another reason, even whether the immunity case gets taken up at some point by the Supreme Court or not, they really can't go forward with trial while a bunch of these charges are up before the Supreme Court with other defendants, because if they rule it unconstitutional, and I think there's a decent chance they will, then they can't, you know, to prosecute a case in the meantime against Trump based on them, it's utterly ridiculous. I don't even think this federal judge would do that.
Yeah.
So I do think that with them not taking the immunity case and with this other case that's going to be decided in the due course, not till at least June, there's no way that March 4th trial can go forward. So then that just throws out the question of when, because you're going to see Democrats going into a panic if they can't – they want to get this guy convicted and pin something on him before the election. That's their only hope.
Yeah. So – and if it doesn't go, it doesn't – yeah. They're going to be –
Exactly. They're going to be going nuts.
Yeah. So let's transition to football. Last week was signing day. And Georgia had the number one class, considered the best. They flipped the defensive back who had been committed to FSU. Ohio State got 2 5-star wide receivers, but they lost a 4-star defensive back to Oregon. Oregon also flipped a wide receiver from USC. Nebraska signed that Dylan Raiola, who had originally flipped from OSU to Georgia, and now he's at Nebraska. His uncle was an offensive lineman a lifetime ago. But evidently his ratings have dipped anyway. So the Hawks are the 33rd best, which is about average. We didn't have anybody swooping
to
steal. So then other stuff on Florida State. So they've had thus far, and it's only grown. But at one point, they had five players opt out for their Orange Bowl game against Georgia. And there are actually ESPN hacks, like that Mad Dog guy, which is an insult to dogs in general, that are actually mad or rabid. He says that FSU players should be grateful for their chance to play Georgia. And he says Georgia's really still the best team in the country when they're at full strength, which is the irony here is that Florida State was, you know, penalized for not being full strength, but Georgia is getting getting a pass from this guy. So he said they did a masterful job of leaving Florida State out because of their injured quarterback. And yes, I mean, Sad Hog is what I call him. Doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
I think that the problem there was, you know, whatever you think about Florida State's schedule or whether they were, you know, deserving of getting in your own mind. My view was that it was shocking in the sense that they are ACC, it's Power 5 conference, and they were undefeated. And I don't know how, given that, you keep them out and take in particularly like a one-loss Texas.
Yeah.
Even the Alabama, they were always going to take a SEC team. But
But they beat Ohio State on the road. I mean, they beat LSU on the road. They beat Florida on the road. You know, I mean, and you can say all you want that Florida's not as good as it, but it's still Florida. It ain't, you know, it ain't UCF. And I'm not knocking UCF, who's had a decent run recently. But, I mean, you know, just to say that, and people say, wow, look, Texas lost to Oklahoma, by the way, who lost to Oklahoma State. I mean, not Texas. Oklahoma lost to Texas. But they were talking about, you know, Oklahoma beat Texas. And then they were talking about Texas's big win over Oklahoma State, who again lost to UCF 45-3. You know,
and they're like an 8-4 team. So I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all of that. Alabama, you could say
Iowa State beat Oklahoma State, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. The whole thing was just. They've got multiple now that are out of it, either from going
I think it was a real bad precedent. Yeah, it's fortunately it can't happen again with the 12 teams coming in, but to not take under these circumstances a Power 5 team that was undefeated and to take a one loss team from another conference.
Yep.
And whatever you think of the ACC, I don't think that the Big 12 is necessarily clearly superior.
No.
Conference. I mean, you know, they're not in the same league with the Big Ten or the SEC, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And yet they did that to Florida State. So, you know, I don't know whether Florida State's the fourth best team in the country, but I do know that when you go undefeated and this is just Mike Tischer's opinion. When you go undefeated and you're in a Power 5 conference, you know, you should not lose a spot in the playoff to a one-loss team.
One-loss team, yeah.
I just don't think you should.
No.
You know.
So Ohio State has also had a bunch of guys opt out for their, I guess it's the Cotton Bowl. Are they in the Cotton Bowl? I think they're
They're playing, who is it, Missouri?
Yeah. Is that the Cotton Bowl? I think it's the Cotton Bowl. Yeah. Marvin Harrison Jr. is there, but his status is unclear. Joe Milton for Tennessee is skipping the Citrus Bowl Monday, even though he is there at the events. But, yeah, Florida State is now looking into getting out of the ACC. I don't – you know, nothing official, but there are people saying Florida State and maybe North Carolina. I hope not North Carolina, but Florida State.
The rumor's the Big Ten, right?
Yeah, but I hope not. Let's not forget, North Carolina was just in an academic fraud investigation, you know, a year or two ago. So I just don't see that as a team that the Big Ten wants. But who knows?
Well, you know, I still get back to this. I know it's archaic about how I thought conferences were supposed to have a regional dimension.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I guess, you know, that went out with the typewriter. But you know what happens, and I've already seen it. It's speculation, but it'll get louder. You get to a 20 or 2014 conference that's just basically national. And the old, and what happens then, you know, you 20 or 20, like I said, 20 or 2014 is like the old rivalries regional rivalries creates a new sort of impetus to maybe we just need to go back to another conference of our own that includes 10 teams that are regionally located. And, you know, maybe that's not a viable response, but it's kind of a gut response to a lot of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know where they can go with it. I mean, you got guys entering the portal from, you know, that are some are starters. Now, some are starters and are not state, you know, there's a couple that are actually, there's one, I forgot where, James Madison, I think it was, their guy entered the portal, their quarterback entered the portal, but played in their bowl game. I don't know how you go there, but, you know,
I'm surprised
you got,
the coach would allow it.
Yeah, I mean, it's – well, no, because
well,
their coach is gone because he took the job at Indiana.
Okay.
James Madison coach. So, but, yeah, Kyle McCord, I don't even know where he is yet. I don't know where he's going.
It's a rumor like it was Nebraska initially, but now something makes me think like there was something about Syracuse coming into the picture.
Yeah, Syracuse, like yeah, exactly. So, you know,
why you'd want to go there, I don't know quite.
Yeah, and he was well, he was at their bowl game that they lost 45-0 to South Florida, by the way. You know, I mean,
by the way, can I make a good word for the Big Ten West? 2-0 in bowls so far.
2-0 in bowls.
Maybe they aren't as pathetic as a lot of the nation thinks, even I thought, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that Wisconsin against LSU is going to be a very good, you know. I don't think that will go well. But Penn State, Ole Miss, Auburn, Maryland. Rutgers is playing Miami, Florida, I think, which is kind of thing since they used to play each other in the old big.
Yeah,
I mean, that's, you know, there's some good games, no doubt. You know, this is why I say Wisconsin. The leading ground gainer going into that game isn't Wisconsin's running back, which would be a foregone conclusion most years. But, no, it's the LSU quarterback, the Heisman Trophy winner, Jaden Daniels. So, you know, who knows?
But one thing was encouraging, good news for from the Iowa perspective, I think, is Jay Higgins' announcement coming back.
And like
coupled,
who I've talked to.
Coupled with an extra year for Nick Jackson, I don't think they would have gone to the trouble of doing that unless Nick Jackson wanted to come back. And it wouldn't make any sense if he was going to go pro.
Well, I would think.
So I'm assuming both those guys will be back.
I would hope so, that he's coming back. I don't, you know, I don't want to say for sure that he is, obviously, but you know, I think it's good news that he got that year. It was based on, remember, they had canceled the shootings there. They had canceled the rest of their season in whatever year it was, 2021, I guess. And remember, they had those shootings, and they canceled the rest of their year. So that's why he applied. That was the basis on which he applied. And so he got that. But yeah, Jay Higgins, and his dad said, you know, announce it before I get on the plane. And he said, but instead he announces it when he gets off the plane. So he got off the plane in Orlando somehow. I don't know if the question came up or how it came up, but he announced that he's coming back. And, you know, I don't know that means that all the others are. I mean, they talk about Castro and Eric All and Luke Lachey.
Well, to me, the two big ones that are, we'll wait to hit, maybe all, but I was thinking, you know, what are Dijon and Castro?
Yeah.
I have no idea what they're going to do.
No.
Something in my mind makes me think that I wouldn't be surprised to see Dijon come back for the simple reason of the way the year ended. And even though he's consensus All-American, he might feel he has something to prove.
Well, and stuff
in terms of
up,
one
yeah,
more year.
Stuff has come up.
He's also just a normal junior. He's not a senior.
Yeah, but stuff has come up about, you know, the posts that he's made. Not saying he's staying, but more along the lines of who said I was leaving, you know? I mean,
right,
I think he's saying
people were
I think
acting
that,
like he's leaving. He said, you know, hey, wait a minute here. You know.
Yeah, I think the point being, I think he's given it some time, and I think that's smart. You know, look, if you'd asked me to advise Jay Higgins, I personally, not from a fan standpoint, but from a practical standpoint, I'd have said, young man, go get paid. Man, you've proved yourself.
I had assumed, Hank, that he was going to go pro until he announced he wasn't.
Yeah,
I assumed he was gone.
Because if there's anybody, and I'm not saying Cooper DeJean or any of those guys aren't more ready or anything like that, but as far as the guys that really played on a pro level, I'd say Jay Higgins is the one that did.
Yeah, well, second-team All-American. I guess maybe he can be, with one more year, be a first-team, maybe even a consensus All-American. Let's see.
Yeah, but
I think, don't you think with DeJuan too, and you, maybe you know something about this more than I do, but I suspect if he's able, and it may well be the case, that he's getting some pretty good NIL, that's an incentive to come back.
Yeah, and that's hard to say. I got a call on the line. Hey, I got a call from 813.
Sure.
What's your name?
Hey, my name's Paul. I'm from Columbus, Ohio, the same hometown as Luke Lachey.
Oh, well, welcome. And what's up?
And that other school, too.
He went to Grandview, which is a high school here in the area. In fact, his parents were my neighbors. And Luke Lachey is one of the nicest high school kids when he was in high school you could possibly imagine. I mean, just as respectful and everything you would want a college All-American type kid to be. And I heard you mention him. I fell over on the chair here. But great kid, good family. And I'll give you a quick Luke Lachey story. About his senior year, he was dating a cheerleader at Grandview, who also lived down the street.
Okay.
And, I mean, they look like prom king and queen all the way, right? He used to leave his blinds open and let me
– hard to believe Luke Lachey could get the cheerleader, you know? But no, I'll get it. Go
ahead,
Paul.
Right, right. Well, he used to leave his blinds open and let me watch him fuck her. She had a monkey on her like you couldn't believe. I mean –
that's enough of Paul. Okay, jeez.
So, I mean, Paul, his whole thing was to call in to sound good and then all of a sudden throw that in.
Yeah, I know.
God,
you got to be kidding me.
It's not funny.
It's not, but it's. I laugh because it's like, really? That guy did that just so he could – I mean, does he not know that I can see his phone number? I can see his phone number.
Hank, maybe he's what Rush used to refer to as a seminar caller.
Yeah. I mean – Really? I mean, why? Why? But anyway, you know, on that note, though, I mean, you know, it's Luke Lachey does have a decision to make. More so, I think. See, Jay Higgins.
Yeah, well, that's the guy. You know, at least they brought that up because I forgot about him. What's he going
to
do?
Yeah, Luke Lachey. I mean, he's still into those. You know, does he have something to prove? Same with Eric All. Jay Higgins, zero to prove. He's proved that he's healthy. He's proved that he can wait. He's proved that he can trust the process, as his dad pointed out many times during the year, as his dad pointed out when people said, your son should be, you know, and it's, you know, I mean, you're really talking about a guy that played behind superstars his first, you know, 3 and 4 years. And so it's really amazing to me that he's decided to come back.
Don't you think that both with All and particularly Lachey, that they got to come back? And I'd say this as someone, if you're just, you know, like an NFL person, just telling them what's best for them. Because Lachey didn't play almost the whole year.
Yeah.
So he can improve his stock
by coming back and having a really good year.
And I think he's just a junior too, isn't he?
Yeah, he still has eligibility. I mean, you know, All still has eligibility. Cade, you know, as does Jay Higgins. I mean, Nick Jackson was the question there, I think. And so that's why it was a little different with Nick Jackson. So, but the rest of them didn't have to apply to get eligibility. But if you, like I said, but what I was originally saying, if Jay Higgins comes to me, which he wouldn't, I would hope he would. I would be the last person he'd come to. You know, I'd say, hey, look, as a fan, I want you back. But look, go get paid, man. There's zero for you to prove. And I said this coming into the season, but I said it based on not just last year, but the previous 2 years. You were seeing him in on third down a lot, not just in coverage, he was in on third and short plays. He was in on second and, you know, times when you're thinking, okay, so they're bringing him in situation. No, they weren't. They were bringing him in because he's a monster. You know, he, like Jack Campbell, he knows where the ball's going to be and he gets there. And so, you know, it's better to have two of those guys on the field than to say, well, we're going to pull one guy off and do it. No, they didn't do that. They put him in when they needed him. And so I just think he's ready. I mean, I think he's got zero to prove, but I'm awfully glad he's coming back.
But yeah, let me ask you though, you think there might be something going on here? This sometimes can happen this way. And we'll see what DeJuan and Castro decide to do so they get looks like Higgins and maybe Jackson back. And, maybe there's and then, you know, McNamara's announced he's coming back. You get Lachey and All coming back.
it's like, hey, we'll have a hell of a team. Let's come back and participate. And whether Dijon does it or Castro, I guess we'll wait and see. But you think maybe there's something going on behind the scenes to try to, hey,
well,
let's get everybody back and see what happens.
But here's the thing. We don't even know who the offensive coordinators are. Now, I did hear Brad Heinrichs on Corey Breda's podcast. The Hawkeye
it can only go up, though, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's going to be
– oh, yeah.
I think it's going to either be Philbin or Crisp. I feel pretty good it's going to be one of those two.
Yeah. But hearing Brad Heinrichs talk, you know, there is talk, and he didn't confirm this, but he did say they're trying to work out NIL stuff. People have suggested that they put together like a Heisman Trophy campaign, which, by the way, this is school. They pretty much said
over Dijon on the offense too.
Yeah.
If
well, that's
back.
What I'm saying. But try to make him like a Charles Woodson type. But the thing is, the school cannot get
Jabril Peppers
the
or something.
Yeah, the NCAA has said in the past, you know, schools themselves cannot be running Heisman campaigns, even though they do it. They're not supposed to. I mean, remember the Hawkeyes did it one year with Chuck Long in 1985, believe it or not. I'll mention it. And they got sort of not slapped, but they were told, hey, no, that's a no-no. You can't be doing that. So,
what's the name of the award the Iowa cornerback won it in 2015. I can't remember
the Tatum. Or no.
The Jack Tatum Award. Yeah, isn't
No.
Probably going to win. I don't think they've announced
Tatum?
It yet, have they?
I thought that was the Big Ten version. I thought is it the Tatum?
I can't remember. No.
It's the Jim Thorpe.
That's it.
Yeah. Desmond King won it.
Did they announce that yet?
Yeah, he did not win it. I forgot who did.
He did not.
Oh, wow. No, I think it was like that kid from Alabama, Kool-Aid McKinnon. I can look real quick.
Okay.
It was not.
He'd be the odds-on favorite if he came back. And like you said, he could. I could see it. If he did come back, he could. He could. You know, he could be. You know, normally that position doesn't compete for a Heisman, but you know, who knows?
Well, Charles Woodson, that's what he won it based on was, you know, they say, well, he won it as a defensive player, but let's face it, he won it for his returning and for his playing on the,
yeah.
No, it was Trey Taylor from Air Force.
Really?
Okay, I guess.
So you're seeing this guy and you're seeing Dijon up until the last couple games of the year and he impresses you more than Dijon. That's amazing to me. But
it
is what it is.
Yeah, in their final win against James Madison in their bowl game, he had three tackles, nothing else. For the year, he had a half a sack. 40 solo tackles. He had 74 total tackles, 40 solo, three interceptions. He did nothing that Cooper DeJean didn't do, or frankly, Sebastian Castro didn't do as a defensive back. But, you know, I don't want to say, you know, there weren't this was a year you did not see any of those, you know, guys with 8 and 10 interceptions this year, you know, that there was no guy like that. I mean, I remember looking at the stats and seeing, you know, interceptions, it was like 6 tied with 4 or something like that. I mean, it was there was no big guy that jumped out at you like a Desmond King did that year. I mean, or like a Josh
but
Jackson.
I don't think
Josh Jackson won it. But Josh Jackson, remember, had like the 4 interceptions in or 3 or 4 interceptions in a game, and you know, just
in that Ohio State game, I think it was.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, probably just Desmond King.
Here's what you're saying. You know, if you the Higgins kind of the what you're saying about Higgins, I would say this to Dijon too. I mean, I'm a huge Iowa fan and love to see him come back, but you do kind of have to say, I think he's being projected as a number one for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe even like in the top 5 or something like, it's hard to tell somebody that's projected like that not to go pro.
Right. Exactly. Now, I don't
know.
You
got to think
of their
future and what they can get, you know, and all that.
And, you know, you can make the argument, Desmond King stayed an extra year and, by all accounts, hurt his draft stock his senior year.
Probably did because he didn't have as good a year and he didn't win the Jim Thorpe his senior year.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you can make all those arguments, but, you know, bottom line is, you know, that, you know, it's what he wants to do. You know, if he wants to stay, then, you know, how can you get mad at him? We certainly can't as a fan, but, you know, from any standpoint, I mean, I think it's from the way, if you look online, if you look on Twitter, you get the impression that his father, Roy, wanted him to stay, or at least wanted him to really think about it. So, you know, I can't argue that. I mean, like I said, I was in a Twitter discussion a little bit today with Jovan Johnson, who, you know, there's a guy that, you know, one was considered undersized and all that, but, you know, had a pretty darn good career as a Hawkeye defensive back and had a really good career in the Canadian Football League. And I know saw time in the NFL. So, you know, there's a guy that can speak from experience and, you know, had a pretty carved himself out a really good career and stayed for all four years.
For DeGene, I would say this, you know, there's NIL possibilities, but he is a junior. He's probably at most 21. So he just goes and, you know, plays one more year here. He's still 22, the normal age. When you'd enter the draft, he could still have a great pro career. I think he can do even more if he stated, unlike maybe King, you know, the way he it was unsatisfying to miss the last few games when he was just starting to come to his stride, by the way, in returning punts. And the offensive side, they just had started in a game or two using him. So I think there's a good chance if he did come back, he'd be even more effective and dynamic than he already is.
Yeah. Well, you could make a lot of – I mean, you know, there's people comparing him, trying to compare him Cooper DeGene to Tim Dwight. And Patterson pointed out, well, actually, Tim's appreciably faster. You know, now.
Yeah, I would say that he is. He is,
but I don't really.
Bad, you know.
No. I mean, but I mean, when you talk about some of the best punt returns, I actually thought some of Desmond King's were flat out. I mean, huge. Yeah. I mean, he had some really, really big ones at opportune times. He had that one against Michigan in 2016. He had that one against Iowa State the year before. Remember where? We had been down, and it didn't look, you know, we ended up winning, and that was our 12-0 season. But at that point, we really weren't sure, you know, were we a good team or not? And he had that big return against Iowa State that pretty much just took it, took us on the winning drive. And that's why, look, I'm not knocking Cooper DeGene. I mean, I think what makes me maddest about that Minnesota callback is you saw how it devastated him. It's almost like he took it personally. Like, I can't believe I did that. Well, in fact, he didn't do anything wrong anyway, but
it's still one of the worst calls I've ever seen.
It's just beyond the pale in terms of poor call. But you know, that's been getting more and more as the season's gone on. We've been seeing more of that. I mean, we've seen really bad calls and really bad.
Then you had the call
overturns,
even though it was reviewed with the fumble in the Big Ten championship game. Look, Iowa needed all the help they could get, and to make that kind of a call, you know, all right, they probably would have lost the game, but they lose 26-0. The two touchdowns are on 5-yard drives. Okay, one was that punt return. But the other one was, you know, that's just clearly how they can call that a fumble. I mean, I just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know how it was. It was terrible. It was awful. But it wasn't as awful as, I mean, that DeGene call was just, I mean, that literally took what.
That literally cost them the Minnesota game, yeah.
Yeah, and what, now people say, well, they had a chance to drive and all that stuff. But the point was, you took all the air out of everyone's tires when you did that, you know.
And that would all have been moot anyway. You know, that punt return stance, the game, it's pretty much over. I think there was about a minute to play.
Yeah,
they weren't
going to
move. Minnesota was not going to move down the field and beat Iowa. They would have had to get in the end zone. They hadn't done that. A field goal wouldn't have done it. You know, so it would have been. It was pretty much that was the game.
Yeah, exactly.
It was that simple.
So, and that's what hacked me about it. I mean, more than anything. So anyway, well, hey, we're up against the time. I assume you'll be watching the game Monday. I will be at the game.
Absolutely.
So
are they doing
that?
By the way, are they doing any Hawkeye
they
Club
always
stuff?
Do. There's the huddle. I think 2 days before down at Point Orlando, I think is where it is. So down off International Drive, which is there's a game watch for one or both of the basketball teams at the Tin Roof, which is an Iowa alum that owns that. There's a tailgate that they have, you know, that the Iowa club, I mean, you know, that not the local, I mean, the National I Club or whatever it has, you know, it there. So it's, I'm going with a buddy that's been a longtime member of the Florida Citrus Sports Board. So, and he keeps saying club seats. I don't know if that means I'm up in a skybox or what exactly it means. If I'm in a skybox,
it's the only way to go if you are. I've done that before. It's the only way to watch a game. Maybe
so,
you've done that too. I don't know.
My wife used to get skybox seats for Magic games, but it was in the old stadium where they were like so high up. Our daughter was the only one that could see down there because she's the only one that didn't need X-ray vision. So we'll be back in the new year and we'll be talking what happens in that bowl game. So in the meantime, have a good new year. Hope you had a great Christmas and we will talk to you later on.
Awesome. Thanks, Hank. Happy New
Thanks.
Year.
Thanks. And to you as well, Mike. Talk to you later. Okay, folks. So that's it. We are out for the rest of this year. Annie with Southern Sense was in the show tonight listening, and she will be going live, doing live video show this Friday. So go to southernsense.com and figure out how you can watch that. She's not going to be here on Blog Talk Radio because of the tech issues that we've been having. I also want to thank Snowman James, who I think might be Duck Northwest Media, but I could be wrong on that. And Indy Hawk was in here as well in the chat. He was keeping people straight, as he said. And I want to thank Mike and, of course, my sister for listening in on the phones. In the meantime, and that jackwagon from 813, dude, you were doing fine until you did that last thing. So in the meantime, hey, go Hawkeyes this weekend. Go all your teams. Hope your teams all win. Have a great weekend. Have a happy New Year. Be safe on New Year's Eve, folks, and we will see you next year. Good night, folks. Happy New Year.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.